Can't get the fish in the line and in the water. Oh yeah. Can't get the fish in the line and in the water. Well, if you ride on gin, you ain't got a chance. Make that old big than this. Can't get the fish line and in the water. I can see you can cast a line sitting there by the riverside.
Welcome to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, in our California studio office. And we also have the Grizz in our La Paz office in Baja, California, sir. And we also have the pleasure of Darla, who is Vice President of Promotions for a company called Outdoor Resorts, or Forever Resorts, excuse me. And in the next 10 minutes, you're going to know everything there is to know, not about Forever Resorts, but about houseboating all across the western United States. So, first of all, Grizz, it's good to have you.
Yeah, well, it's always good to be there. And I can't wait to hear about this. Sounds really, really good.
Well, let's introduce Darla, Darla Cook. And first of all, Darla, give us a quick idea what you do for Forever Resorts, and then let's just jump into Forever Resorts. The more I learn about it, the more confused I get, because you guys are big.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you having me on the show today. It's a beautiful day at the lake. What can I say?
Which lake?
And it's always a fun day. Actually, it's Lake Mead.
Okay.
I'm at Lake Mead just outside of Las Vegas. And it's a gorgeous day to be out on the water. And best of all, on top of a houseboat. We have houseboat rentals that we have all over the United States. Mostly in the western United States. We're in Northern California at Trinity Lake and Lake Oroville, just outside of Sacramento. Lake Don Pedro on the way to Yosemite. Lake Berryessa, just south of Napa. And in Nevada, Lake Mead and Lake Mojave, which is right above and below Hoover Dam. And we're also on Lake Powell in northern Arizona, part of the Colorado River system. And if you're back east a little ways, we're at Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri. So a little bit of something for everybody, and it's a fun day at the lake. What can I say?
Well, Darla, I have to say that we had the pleasure, you know, just this week of visiting. We were up at Shasta and at Oroville, and never been on a houseboat before. And the houseboats that I've seen were kind of like, you know, a pontoon with some, you know, with a kitchen in it or something like a travel trailer. But these are incredible. I mean, it's a deluxe
condo.
Yeah, these
are like floating condos on the water.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you just kind of give a brief description of, you know, I know that you've got, you know, different types, but to kind of run down what they are and what they might be used for. In other words, if you've got a, you know, a family or a group of people that want to go water skiing, and kind of give an idea of some recommendations on the different types of boats and what they're used for. And if you can, I don't know how much time we have, but give us an idea of what you recommend for people for different lakes.
Okay. Well, these boats are manufactured by Fun Country Marine Industries, and it's one of the sister companies to Forever Resorts. So we actually build these boats, and they were developed starting with the old pontoon-type boats, and we had customers that had rented those from us for years, and was giving us feedback on new things that they would like aboard the boats, and we acquired a manufacturing facility in Muncie, Indiana, and started building our own vessels. And so after about several hundred of them, I think we've manufactured more than 500 boats, but there's about 250 in the fleet now nationwide. We've encompassed a lot of things that people have asked for their vacations. They've got gas grills on the front decks. You can drive these boats from down on the captain's helm or up on the upper deck on the flying bridge to be up where everybody else is relaxing on the 500-square-foot upper deck. They all have water slides off the back, so if once you're parked in a cove, you can enjoy the water with the kids. And that's kind of fun, too, with the adults to see how they react to that. Full kitchen. We provide all the linens on board, so when you take your vacation, you don't have to bring a whole lot with you, just your food and personal items, and you're set for a vacation on the water. A lot of folks like to do these for family reunions. We get some businesses that like to just kick back a little bit with their top producers and take them out to do some team building activities out on the water, but they're built for comfort, not for speed, and they are all luxury inside. Central heat and air, so they're nice whether it's in the wintertime in the desert at Lake Mead or Mojave or even up at Lake Powell. And in the summertime, they've got central air conditioning, so you're not without any place that you go. They sleep up to 10, you know, depending on the size of the vessel. They've got queen-size beds inside and bathrooms that have showers, so you've got fresh water showers. And we've taken into account the environment when we built these boats. We want to make the most environmentally friendly as possible for folks in the outdoors, so they don't put any gray water overboard. Anybody that's a boater understands what that means, mixing the gray and the black, but we actually self-contain. Everything's self-contained on these boats, so they're a lot of fun. And
well, Darla, let me make a comment or maybe an observation and ask a question.
Okay.
What you're talking about is people, you know, going up to the lake is usually something they decide maybe in the middle of the week to go up that weekend. But what you're talking about is something completely different. If someone's going to take a trip to, say, Cabo San Lucas or Alaska or, you know, a ski vacation, they plan that a long time in advance. So what you do mostly is most of your people spend 3, 4, 5, 7 days. And it's something that you don't do at the last minute because the prime time you require reservations. So this is something people ought to start thinking about right now for next year.
Yeah. That is correct. We do have the occasional person that's never been before, but that only want to try it for a day or two, and we rent these by the day, so they can actually go out for a 3-day trip. But my favorite is to probably go out for an extended weekend. If you've never been before, that would be my recommendation. It gives you enough time to experience it, enough time to relax. The bigger vessels have satellite television on board, so if you wanted to even go out and not miss the Sunday football games, you can do that too.
By the way, this last week when we got back, I trolled some lead cord and needlefish behind, and we were catching trout left and right, and trolling real slow. But the thing is, you know, they're not cheap. There's no question about that, but with the amount that you can accommodate, if you do per person, it's quite reasonable. But you need to kind of look into it. And what is your website?
The website is foreverhouseboats.com, and you can check out all the different boat sizes and destinations that we offer there.
Okay. Well, we've only got a short time left, but give us a quick idea. What are some of the lakes that you cover and why you would recommend them for different people or different times of the year?
Well, if you're wanting to do something during fishing season or in the fall or the winter months in the desert locations, that's probably some of the best times to get away and to have the most availability. And Lake Mead and Lake Mojave and Lake Powell are three of the most spectacular places to go during those time periods. And if you want to still have some fairly nice weather in the desert, those to me are the best times to go. Mm-hmm. In the fall and the winter months, and even in the spring, if you're doing fall activities on the water's still warm and not a lot of people around. If you want to do, you know, you can bring your ski boat with you and have wakeboarding and skiing as well as fishing. You can tow them behind the houseboat to save on fuel.
Well, it's your family vacation home.
Yeah,
okay.
Our floating condo on the water.
It is that, exactly. And we appreciate coming on. I wish we had another 10 minutes that we could go into, because it is certainly fascinating. But I would suggest that they get in touch with Darla, and it's the website is
foreverhouseboats.com.
Okay, that's easy enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you did a great job. And yeah, I think the Grizz and I are going to talk about this some more, because I'm sure that we'd like to get some people together, and maybe we can even actually could get you on Sportsman's Channel. So
okay.
Thank you, Darla. We really appreciate that. And Grizz, you stick around, because we're not through with you yet. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio, and we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Oh,
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Set on the magnificent Sea of Cortez, the Grand Heritage Resort and Spa at Marina Costa Baja is the first five-star resort in La Paz, Baja South. Overlooking a 250-slip marina and white sand beaches, enjoy two signature restaurants, a world-class destination for fishing or diving. Enjoy five-star elegance in the charming, laid-back city of La Paz. Dock your boat and enjoy the Marina Village. Visit on the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
Brand new motor and boat with a bunch of fancy gear, crepes, steaks, you know, and lures. Every style, type, and size, if you think that'll help, you're in for a surprise, because money can't buy school. You know the guys and me, we can catch them at will against Shadrath.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John in studio in our California office, and we have Mike the Grizz in our La Paz office online with us. And in the next 10, 12 minutes, you are going to learn everything that you didn't even know that you wanted to know about rainbow trout, because I'm fascinated. I can't wait to bring Anders online with this. And matter of fact, let's just go ahead and bring Anders online with this. And Anders, if you don't mind, I know that you enjoy angling, but your book is not from, your own experiences. So give us an idea how this, the name of the book and how it came about.
Okay, the name of the book, hi John, and hi Mike. It's the name of the book is An Entirely Synthetic Fish, How Rainbow Trout Beguiled America and Overran the World. And the title itself actually comes from a 1939 report to the from the head of the U.S. fish hatcheries, who wrote in his report to Congress that, you know, he was pleased to announce he could now create what an entirely synthetic fish, such as a game trout, such as rainbow trout. And the book is really the story of, it's a biography of rainbow trout, although it's really not about the fish, it's about us over the last 150 years. Yeah.
Yeah, could you do me a favor and just talk a little louder? I can't hear you down here in Mexico.
Thank you.
Okay, so the book is a biography of rainbow trout over the last 150 years, although it's really more about us than it is about the fish. Rainbow trout, as you probably all know, have become this iconic fish the world over. They're present in every continent except Antarctica, every state in the United States, including Hawaii. And people have come to just take them for granted. And actually, they have a really fascinating story behind them and how they came to dominate the world like this.
Well, we don't have the couple hours to do what you do in the book. Could you kind of give us an idea? First of all, do we know where they started? And is there such a thing as a pure wild strain of rainbow trout?
Okay, so rainbow trout are native to the Pacific Rim, from Mexico up all the way around through California, Alaska, all the way over to the Kamchatka Peninsula over in Russia. But we've spread them all around the world, and we spread them around the world. Most of that occurred in the 19th century, and I'll sort of tell you how it all began. We were undergoing an industrial revolution in the United States at the end of the 19th century that was unlike anything we'd seen before. And it had a couple of effects. First of all, it decimated the fisheries back east. And second of all, it created this vast wealth for a small segment of society. And they became very concerned that their offspring, who at one point had been, you know, doing manual labor, were now sitting around, maybe not working at all, or if they were working, were in offices. And they became very concerned. And I'll read a quote to you from Oliver Wendell Holmes, Sr. This is written in the 19th century. He wrote in one prominent magazine, "Such a set of black-coated, stiff-jointed, soft-muscled, paste-complexioned youth as we can boast in our Atlantic cities never before sprang from the loins of Anglo-Saxon lineage." So they were scared. I always actually take heart from that quote, because they were worried about the same things we worry about today with our kids not getting outside enough. And what was the solution to that? Well, it was to get the kids out fishing again. The only problem was there weren't any fish in the rivers. So what were they to do? They decided to try artificial propagation, so artificially propagating these fish, stock them into the rivers. That'll turn the boys into manly men again, and democracy will be safe.
That's incredible.
And it just goes sort of forward from there. There's a lot of amazing stories. The book is a collection of sort of what I think are truly amazing stories. And the things we've done in the name of these fish, trying to get people out fishing and get rainbow trout out there. So, for example, in 1962, we poisoned the entire Green River watershed in Wyoming. That's the southwest quarter of Wyoming. That's a 15,000-mile, square-mile watershed. That's the size of Connecticut and Massachusetts combined. So we poisoned out all of the fish that were in there, native and a few non-natives, so that we could then make it safe to introduce these non-native rainbow trout. And there was almost no controversy about it at the time. But afterwards, some of the dead fish from the poisoning project wound up downstream in Dinosaur National Monument, and that set off a real firestorm of controversy that because Dinosaur had become sacred ground to Americans thanks to the efforts of the Sierra Club, who had blocked a dam there that Bureau of Reclamation wanted to build. So Americans were very upset, and also Rachel Carson had just published Silent Spring, which was a book that was on everybody's mind. And so all of a sudden we had chemicals in our national parks, and Americans became outraged. And Stuart Udall, who was the Secretary of Interior, initiated a review of the whole project, and that led directly or indirectly straight to the Endangered Species Act 10 years later. And under the Endangered Species Act, we've now spent more than $100 million trying to restore many of the exact same fish that we were poisoning out in 1962. So it's sort of a story of how our attitudes have changed over the decades. And of course, today we have all sorts of controversies where fish and game agencies are trying to remove rainbow trout to restore fish frequently and sometimes other fauna like frogs in California's Sierra Nevada.
Well, that's incredible, isn't it? This book sounds wonderful. I've got to read it.
Yeah, I think anybody that enjoys stream fishing would like to know. But let's get back to rainbow trout, where they came from, where they are. And, you know, the question is, you know, we have people that believe that the rainbow that we have here, there is such a thing as local native wild rainbow trout. In a newspaper article I saw a couple years ago in where we are, there was something like 200,000 rainbow trout released in our waters, and this was in like 1908. So what are the chances that these hatchery fish you know, are different than the now hatchery fish are different than the wild trout?
Yeah, I see your point. So yeah, first of all, rainbow trout, we stock 100 million of them in the United States every year, weighing 25 million pounds. So they're all catchables. So they are they are far and away the most widely stocked fish in the United States. And they have had these profound impacts because beyond competing or preying on other animals, maybe one of their biggest impacts has been they hybridized. And like you say, they frequently will be spawning with they would have spawned with the wild and native trout in California. And they also can spawn and hybridize with cutthroat trout. And so there are very few populations of pure cutthroat trout left in the Rocky Mountain West. And where you do find them, they're frequently up in these headwater streams where there's a barrier waterfall that's prevented the rainbow trout or their hybrid offspring from getting there. And that raises some really sticky management issues. So for example, with the West Slope cutthroat, which was the most widespread subspecies of cutthroat up until 100 years ago, they're in Idaho, Montana. They've been driven back to the point that there's the only place you can find these pure West Slope cutthroat are in these very high tiny headwater streams, and the populations are so small that they're at real risk of inbreeding depression. And in addition, we've probably lost any pure West Slope cutthroat that were adapted to the big river conditions. And the only place you have, but these genes are still out there, It's just that they're present in these hybrid fish that are hybrid rainbow West Slope cutthroat fish that are in the main stem of so many rivers. And so the question becomes, are these hybrid fish, are they a threat to the West Slope cutthroat, or are they their only hope for salvation? Mm-hmm. It may be that the only way to save the West Slope cutthroat is to allow them to breed with these hybrids so that we get some, we eliminate the inbreeding depression and get some of these genes back. So it raises these really sticky questions of how to handle these situations.
Well, yes, it goes to show, is, you know, we've learned a lot, and learning a lot of done things wrong in outdoor management. But now here's another question for you. What is the difference between a rainbow trout and a steelhead?
They're the same species, and it's very difficult to distinguish. They freely interbreed. In fact, interestingly, a steelhead population from one tributary is often more closely related to the stream-resident rainbows than it is to the steelhead from another tributary. So they are exactly the same species. It's just that they're a different life form. The steelhead go out to the ocean. What we often refer to as a rainbow trout, a stream-resident rainbow trout would be a better way of putting it, just reside in the fresh water their whole lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of concern about the endangered steelhead. And out in California, they're very, very strict. But my understanding is that if you have, let's say, a pond of rainbow trout and they have access to the ocean, some of them will go and return. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question about whether, yes, that is true. Now, the question is, what's driving this life form? And we don't really have a good answer for that yet. Is it a gene? Is it as simple as a few genes that drive the fish to either go out to the ocean or stay in the ocean or stay in the fresh water? Or is it something else? If there is a gene, we haven't identified it yet. So it's this very tricky question of what drives these different life forms, and we don't have a clear answer right now.
Okay,
the other tricky thing is that when we were originally raising these hatchery rainbows like you might stock, we probably mixed together steelhead with stream resident forms, so they may have those.
Anders, I think we need another hour for this, but unfortunately we got 30 seconds. So why don't you give us some contact information? And, of course, if anybody needs information, they can go to fishtalkradio.com and we'll hook them up. But just in a few seconds, give us your contact information.
Okay, the best way to do it is to go to my website, which is andershalverson.com. That's A-N-D-E-R-S-H-A-L-V-E-R-S-O-N.
.com. Fascinating. Grizz, stay tuned. Anders, we're glad to have you, and we're going to try it again sometime. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio, and we'll be back with you shortly.
Sounds like rain. Hurry up, woman. Get the youngest. Let's go.
Considered the finest long-range sport fishing vessel in the world, the Royal Polaris is based at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Fishing the Royal Polaris provides unmatched service, speed, and comfort. Live the dream of landing giant yellowfin tuna, wahoo, and summer albacore. Still the fastest long-range sport fisher in the world at 113 feet, the Royal Polaris offers first-class staterooms, refrigerated fish storage, the latest in electronic fish-finding gear, and unmatched expertise. Live your dream for less money than expected. Visit RoyalPolaris.com.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
Got a touch of them fisherman blues. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. Now let me tell you now.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio and in our other studio down in the capital city of Baja California, sir, the beautiful city of peace, La Paz, is Mike the Grizz of Adventures, ASOB, Adventures South of the Border. And in our other office, a little bit farther down the coast, in the Picante office in the marina, as we have Wolf, who's back from his adventures in the United States. And we're going to find out, first of all, about what's happening in Cabo San Lucas.
Well, John, Wolf? Well, I was down in was up in Virginia catching five-inch sunfish.
Whose birthday is it, Mike?
Well, it's Jessica's birthday today.
Oh, because I hear the margaritas. It got sounds like mariachis.
Yes, it was. Well, so while I was catching those smallmouths and bluegills, man, they've been clobbering the fish. The fishing down here has been unreal. Sailfish are just hot. The water's been warm, and they're catching tons of sailfish.
What is the water temperature, Mike?
It's been in the mid to high 80s. And we have, in this last couple of days at the Los Cabos Billfish Tournament, they caught black marlin, three blacks, eight blues, 16 stripers, and 20 sailfish. So it's been a really,
this
really
is definitely
good
the time of the year. Hey, I'm going to be fishing with you next week. Do I get air conditioning? Do I get air conditioning on my boat?
Well, of course you do.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Then I'll go too.
Okay, sounds good. Of course you do.
Yeah, but the fish are outside. And I'll tell you, one of our captains came in just earlier, and he said they saw Dorado, a big school of Dorado chasing flying fish. They wouldn't take the baits because they were catching them in the air. I think it's time for Grizz to get out his fly rod.
Oh.
And catch one in the air.
I'll bring my fly rod. You got it there, buddy.
Okay. I mean, it's just amazing. We had some great tuna fishing. We had a 218-pound tuna, I believe it was, and a 240-pound tuna. So it's like some of the best fishing in the year right now, and it's tournament time.
Well, there's you think it's a coincidence that this is when they have the tournaments?
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But, you know, this also has been the full moon, and everyone says, oh, there's no good fishing in a full moon. And, man, they've just been clobbering.
Yeah, yeah.
A 543-pound blue marlin.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, and it does seem that we've seen in the last month or two a lot of blues coming around. So it could be that the Bisbee Black and Blue could be a really good tournament. And I understand that, you know, the economy's kind of bounced a little bit, and they're getting their number of boats is coming back up again.
Yeah, well, you know, and actually last year it was one of the best years ever for the Bisbee. The first day they caught more fish than ever before, and I'm expecting this year they're going to do just as well because, like I say, the machine's good, and if you want to catch some big fish, boy, now is the time to come down.
Right. Well, you know, like I said, when the weather's warm, the fishing is hot.
Yep. That's what's happening.
But of course, when we say warm, if the water temperature's in the upper 80s, we don't even want to know what the ambient temperature is.
Well, actually, you know, the temperatures here have been close to what I was experiencing in Virginia, you know, in the 90s, and the humidity's down around 50%, so it's not even too humid now.
Well, that's perfect. That's perfect. Well, it sounds like it might be a good idea. I know that it might be difficult to get down there and get a room in a boat this week, but, you know, the fishing stays good throughout November.
Right. We've got the Baby Bisbee, they call it, the Los Cabos Bisbee, Los Cabos, starting here in a few days. Then the Bisbee's Black and Blue, and then in November the Los Cabos Tuna Jackpot. So, I mean, it's turning out to be just a great fishing season.
Great. Mike, if somebody wants to go down and get one of those air conditioning boats like the kind I'm going to use, I think we're going to be on the Salsa 35, and I've been on that boat.
John, that's we're going to use.
Yeah, no, I'll take that one. You can. No, the next day we're fishing with Francisco on the 45-foot Grizz.
Oh, we are?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
No, Monday, you are fishing with us on the Salsa. You are.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And you're going to be filming it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, anyway, Picante Sport Fishing in Cabo San Lucas. And, Mike, you can stay on if you want. We got Chucky on the line. But what is the contact for Picante Sport Fishing?
You can call us here right in the marina using our Vonage line, 714-572-6693, and talk to one of our friendly representatives here, right where we can see the boat.
And it's Picante, is it Picante Sport Fishing?
PicanteSportFishing.com.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's have Chucky join in the party. Chucky, how's the fishing up a little bit north of Cabo San Lucas and East Cape at the Palmas de Cortez?
Well, sorry. It's been steady. We've seen a little bit more Dorado coming in. Not medium size, but nice Dorado. There were some. We started experiencing the first north winds in the last week, and people who went down to the shore got into really nice cargo fishing just by the shore here in the former hotel, close to La Ribera. In that area, it was great cargo fishing. The guys that did go out got into some striped marlin. Striped marlin are more in. And the tuna is they're kind of in and out, really far away, closer to the water banks over there. But you know they're moving around. So the weather is nice. It's really changed. It's not as hot. It's really nice. It's getting into our fall, which is cool in the 90s, but you know. At night, it cools off really a lot. But it's really nice, really nice. This morning was beautiful. You know, Flatness Lake, nice breeze when you come in, so it's been really good.
Chucky, we're going to be coming down to see you, and I think the first part of November, we got a real fun trip coming down.
John.
I'm sorry?
I'll be with Chucky tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Well,
I just want to make a comment. I had a lady cop who's been a police officer 24 years, went a trip with me and went to Chucky's to fish. She got her grand slam in 3 days with Chucky.
And
how about that?
A grand slam,
that's
is?
A lady that, a little bitty gal, she's probably 5 foot tall, and she got a grand slam down there with Chucky.
Okay, and what was the grand slam?
Marlin, sailfish, tuna, dorado, was a slam, and then she picked up, I think she got 7 rooster fish.
Well, does that have to be in one day?
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, if she got it in one day, she'd be dead.
Well,
that
anyway,
would kill a woman.
I was going to say, November, I don't know if we have any room left, but if people want to get in touch with me, we might be able to slide them in. And that's 4 nights, 2 days fishing for, I don't even want to tell you the price. You wouldn't believe it. Besides, Chuck, you'd get mad if I did. But let's just put it this way. If you got a paper route, you can afford it. But that's going to be November. And we like November because the fishing is still great and the temperature is just kind of backing off a little bit so that it's really comfortable. So hopefully we're going to have some of those fish coming back in. Chucky, you've had a bonus year this year with tuna and some of the other, and dorados, some big fish, haven't you?
Yeah, the biggest tuna this year was 343 pounds. Some guys that came in there and it was actually by itself hooked on a marlin lure and had a 4 hour fight there and mm-hmm. It was really nice. So big tuna, I got a 550-pound blue marlin.
I'm sorry, you said, oh, that's right. We almost forgot about that. Hey, Chucky, can you get a little closer, speak up a little bit? We're having a little difficulty. But earlier in the year, you got, was it a 500 and what pound?
457 blue. They caught a big one in Cabos, I think. Rich knows about that one. It's at 1,087, I think. The 343-pound yellowfin tuna. And the biggest dorado, the dorados were in the 54, I think, biggest dorado. So, very good fish, nice fish, and great weather, great Columbia.
Chucky, if you were going to be fishing in the Bisbee, and I would kind of wouldn't be surprised if you were, what do you do to catch those big fish? Do you use, you know, a big live bait? Do you troll or you go deeper? You know, what's the method, the best method to try and catch big fish?
Well, you can use both, but like the 557 pounder, we caught it on a lure, and so I think the strategy that you should do is get some really like football size tuna,
uh-huh.
And put them down, you know, and throw them, slow throw around where the tuna are, and might get into a really nice marlin fishing.
Well, do you need downriggers or anything, or do you just gear them up and just do a slow troll?
Just do a slow troll. Mm-hmm. I mean, downriggers will help, but not too deep. And of course, I mean, luck has to do a lot here. When you got to fish in the right area, right spot. But that's the way to catch them. I mean, of course, you know, have nice lures local. We were fishing in the area really close by with, you know, there's a bank, you know, the Riviera Bank, and mm-hmm. you know, and they stay around that area, so that's, you know, Gordo is a good place, and you can go to the bank where the good amount is low.
What I can tell you is that if you want to catch the fish, you go where the fish are. And if you want to catch big fish, go where the big fish are. And the best place to do that is Baja Sur, in particular, East Cape area. And in most particular is the Palmas de Cortez. What a beautiful, beautiful hotel. You wake up in the morning, beautiful sunrise. You just have some breakfast, walk out, get on your boat. And, you know, depending where the fish are, it could be a few minutes or, you know, a few miles. But we're going to have to let you go, Chucky. And you go to fishtalkradio.com, and right on the front page where it says Van Wormer Resorts, click on that and get in touch with us. Okay, Grizz, we appreciate that. And Chucky, well, we certainly appreciate having you on. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio, and we'll be back soon.